Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast in which two movies with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. On this episode, in the red corner, super smart sharks snack on scientists in 1999's Deep Blue Sea.
Just what the hell did you do to those sharks?
Jim and I used gene therapies to increase their brain mass.
What is that?
As a side effect, the sharks got smarter.
And in the blue corner, a giant snake has a crush on J-Lo in 1997's Anaconda.
They have come to the world's most isolated jungle. Now, they are the ones being hunted.
There's something down there.
Anaconda. When you can't breathe, you can't scream.
So what connects these films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, welcome to Clash of the Titles, fight fans. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm LL Cool Chris.
Is that what we're going for? I like that.
Oh, thank you, baby bird. These are all references to come later in the podcast, sorry.
Please, let's make that clear. All right then, so the two movies going head to head are Anaconda and Deep Blue Sea. I gave Anaconda to you, Vicky. I gave Deep Blue Sea to you, Chris. These were my picks. We do it chronologically, which means Anaconda is first. Take us away, V.
No, because we've got to talk about what the connection is.
Oh, shit.
I mean, Vicky, what is the connection?
Wait, I'm so glad. Ask me first, because I've got a really brilliant pun. Ask me.
Okay, wait.
I just did.
All right, let's rewind. But Chris did just ask you, I think.
Literally said the words.
Yeah, he said, what's the connection, V? Do you want me to say it? Would that help?
Yeah, ask me.
Fine. What is the connection between these movies, Victoria?
It's Rappers and Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's a pun!
Rappers and Beasts and Where to
Find Them. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Rappers and Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Pun? Is that a pun?
I'm just going to look at the definition of pun.
I was really worried that you, Chris, were going to steal it by looking at my notes like you did last week.
Well, you didn't send them to me this week,
no,
therefore I did not.
That's
look
fool
at
me once.
No.
Fuck you.
Classic saying. Now, listen, it is correct. I mean, the pun sort of mangles it a bit, but yes, it is about rappers fighting killer animals.
But there is one more.
I know.
Ah.
I think I know it, but go on.
Walt Conti?
Yes, Walt Conti.
Walt Conti is the animatronic man who did the beasts on both films.
Well.
He built the sharks, the Mako sharks, the 26-foot-long Mako sharks, and he built the snake and anaconda.
As well as Free Willy.
Yeah, he did Free Willy, yeah.
Free Willy's a real whale.
Okay.
Not for the whole film, no.
Oh. Okay, no, fine, I knew that.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. There is another connection. Do you want another connection, Chris?
Do it.
Okay. So I'm not trying to out-geek you, but I did find one. By accident, I didn't go looking. This isn't a competition, it is. I found out that the guy who voices the parrot in Deep Blue Sea is a guy called Frank Welker, and he also voices the snake in Anaconda. I know the snake doesn't make any speech at all, although I think it would be great if the snake went, the reason I'm killing you all. However, he does, I guess, do the hiss.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weird noises coming out of that snake. So that's
Frank,
very
welcome.
Interesting.
There you go. Three connections, but it is the first one. Rappers versus killer creatures. All right, we do them chronologically. Anaconda, 1997. That means you start, V.
From 1997, I watched Anaconda, starring John Voight, where a mysterious and deadly predator journeys down the Amazon on a systematic killing spree. Also, there's a massive snake in it.
All right, everybody, double-check your gear, make sure it's all on board, and pray you didn't forget your bug spray.
They have come to explore the unknown Amazon. Now, they are the ones being hunted.
Get out of my face!
You're gonna get us all killed!
Anaconda.
So, did you enjoy Anaconda?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was brilliant.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I was really cross about thinking it was brilliant because when you picked it, I was like, oh, honestly, like, here we go. And I had seen it before, but obviously just forgotten everything that had happened because I really, really enjoyed it.
I totally forgot Owen Wilson was in it until he popped up. I was like, oh, yeah,
It's because he isn't being very Owen Wilson in it. They're not letting him go full Owen Wilson.
No, he's very reserved.
You wouldn't think this is the guy that's going to become a movie star out of the sort of male actors in this film.
No. You watch someone who is a movie star, I guess, sort of try and undo that with one hell of a performance.
Do you want to know how to survive being squeezed by a massive snake?
You need to always carry a shovel with you and hold it.
Do you wink at it? There is a wink in this film. We'll be getting to.
Wink. There is.
No, you unwrap it tail first. So imagine a snake is wrapping itself around you. Your instinct would be to unwrap it from its head because obviously you fear of getting bitten. But the weakest part of the squeeze is at its tail.
Okay.
I also did some research and learned that anacondas aren't really man-eaters.
No.
But they are cannibals. And it's the green anaconda. The larger female consumes the smaller male.
I tell you what they are good at, though, is climbing poles. And the very first scene of this film is a man in the sort of outpost cabin, and he's aware that this anaconda beast is coming to get him, so he climbs up a pole to escape it.
Yeah, it's the most ridiculous place to hide. Where am I going to hide? On the ship's mast. Yeah.
It's a good cold opening, because both these films have kind of that cold open, and I like this one. And it's Danny Trejo, who we recognise. He became more of a star after this, I guess.
Yeah, I was expecting him to be in it more, and then he's just gone.
It's kind of disappointing. But probably at the time, I wasn't expecting it, because I'd probably seen him in one, maybe just From Dusk Till Dawn. I think he's being dubbed, isn't he? It doesn't sound like his voice.
Is he really?
Yeah, his voice is a bit higher in it than the Danny Trejo.
There's a snake coming to get me.
That's it.
Oh, yeah, there's a brilliant bit. I think full respect to the slow motion nail. Did you see that moment where the snake's coming up through the floor and the nail just sort of flies in slow motion in front of his face and he looks and it's like, nail!
Run up a mast.
Yeah. So then we get into like the whole rest of the cast, the ones who are still alive at this point. And we meet J-Lo, who's a filmmaker. She's a director.
Yeah. She's a documentary director.
Right.
This is her big break. You meet this documentary crew like with Jonathan Hyde, who plays like a snarky David Attenborough, Owen Wilson. I don't know what he's there to do.
Sound guy,
sound.
I think. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Mm. He's there to do sound and be horny.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
about
that.
He's a very horny man.
He certainly is.
And they are there to annoy an indigenous tribe without that tribe's permission in order to make their fame and fortune.
I mean, it is kind of questionable, the ethics behind what they're doing in the first place. This tribe that have never been seen choose not to make contact with the outside world, and Eric Stoltz is like, we're going to go find them.
We're going to find them anyway. It's extremely questionable.
The people of the Mist are going to meet Ice Cube very soon.
Big day for them. Big day for them.
But they nicely establish all the characters very quickly in their first 5 minutes on the boat. They've each got a little trait.
What would you say J-Lo's main trait is? I would say her main job is to look uncomfortable, but sexily sweaty, and that's it.
Doesn't everyone look sweaty, though? I mean, I made a note of Danny Trejo looking sweatier than any man I've ever seen in that first sequence.
Yeah. An anaconda would struggle to get a grip on that. There'd be no purchase. No purchase at all. Just slide right off him.
Did you have a problem with J-Lo in this film? I remember one of the reasons I watched this film was because she was in it.
I didn't have a problem. I just thought, there's only so many times you can put your hair up and rub your neck. Do you know what I mean? Just leave your hair up. Don't take it down.
Yeah. But this was a big establishing role for her. She'd done Money Train. I remember we've kind of all seen her in that, but this was the first lead role that she'd had.
She was, it was going to be, I think it was going to be Gillian Anderson was the first choice for this, but she couldn't do it because of the X-Files.
This would have been a cracking episode of the X-Files, I think.
Do you think? Yeah. I mean, what's the supernatural element? Did you ever watch the X-Files?
Well, it's an animated snake.
Right, but it's
not real. It's a cartoon snake.
Oh, you mean the X-Files episode would be about the fact that the snake wasn't real?
And John Voight's clearly from another planet.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about John Voight. I don't want to talk about anything else. I just want to talk about him. I thought he was amazing when he's like, I'm from Paraguay, and everyone's like, really? And it's like, really?
Yeah, because you're like, right, okay, I get you're from Paraguay, but where's the accent from? Yeah.
It's from Scarface. The accent's from Scarface. The character's from Paraguay.
He says things like that are cool, though. He goes like, five whiskeys? That's just breakfast on the river. And I'm like, ah, I want to hang out on this river.
Yeah.
I mean, he seems like a crazy man from the off. Like, I think often in these films, you can meet the guy and he seems charming at first, the stranger that they meet who needs help, and then they'll build up to him being the villainous, crazy person. But here, he's gone up to 11 from the beginning.
There's that bit where he catches a big fish to sort of win their trust on the documentary crew, and it seems to me like he'd speared it just with his snarl. He's like grimacing over the river and this fish jumps onto his spear out of sheer horror.
I've never seen a man eat fruit so disgustingly.
Yeah, menacingly.
It's just like, it's like really, do you know, it reminded me of the guy, the steward of Gondor. You know the bit in Return of the King where he's eating those tomatoes, the cherry tomatoes, and it's all dribbling down his chin? It's a lot like that.
You've just got such an encyclopedic knowledge of things that I've completely forgotten.
You know the bit I mean.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, I tell you, if Chris doesn't remember it, maybe it didn't happen.
It's not coming back to me.
How do you remember Money Train and not that?
I don't know, because I remember J-Lo was in Money Train. I don't remember what she ate in it.
There's the famous scene where she has that yogurt. She eats a yogurt.
Puts her hair up.
They're sailing up the Amazon, through the Amazon.
Through the Amazon.
They see John Voight. He needs help. What is John Voight's plan in this film? Because I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense because he's going to take them hostage. But why them? Like he sets up an elaborate sting operation where his boat appears to have crashed. And he's in cahoots with Mateo to get on board their ship.
And Mateo's in charge of their ship.
Yeah, he's
driving the captain of their ship.
No, sailing the ship. Sailing the ship?
Piloting
the
captaining.
Ship. Captaining.
Is it Mateo's ship that they have rented?
Yeah.
So why couldn't Mateo and him have just used that ship?
Yeah, that's a good point.
This was really bugging me.
That's a really good point.
There is a good, solid... He's thought it through. It's just the start. It's like, why is he not Mateo?
The middle of this imaginary plan. Say that the documentary could have been like, we're absolutely fine with capturing an alive 40-foot snake. What do you do with it then? Like, are you just going to put it in the middle of the boat? Are you going to put it in bed? And then what's the plan when you get that snake back to dry land? Does it go to a zoo?
He was going to sell it for millions. So I think there's a black market buyer that's out there that he can...
Okay. I mean, I'll just say it's a lot of handbags. That's all.
Oh, come on.
It is.
How did you feel about the snake in question?
I thought it was a shame that we see the snake's face so quickly. So if it had been me, even though a lot of a snake looks the same, I would have done back of the snake, middle of the snake.
Mm. It looks really cute when you first see it. When it pops its head out of the water and goes, am I?
I think it looks kind of fun. I was laughing in that little moment.
Which I think is a bad
mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, but we also, I think, is it just before then or just after then? That snake is tough. Like, it pops a panther's eye out.
Mm.
It's crushed. I think that was a good scene where it crushes Bagheera and its eye pops out.
It spits a monkey at a Brit.
Yeah, that's so brilliant.
Right, that is great. Do you know who the real victims in Anaconda are? Monkeys.
Yeah.
A monkey gets eaten and then spat out. A monkey gets shot and used as bait. A monkey gets tied to some kind of table by John Voight at the end and drained of its blood.
Bled, yeah.
I mean, if you were a monkey watching this, you'd be like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, that's why I chose not to watch this one with a monkey. But
that's respectful.
As you say, though, I think all of the crew, they sort of get killed off one by one, but they all kind of deserve it.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it, though, I think. If it would be a much shorter film if the snake had just gone, I'm going to do you all. Bang!
But, I mean, they're literally getting what they deserve, aren't they? Because isn't the snake protecting the people of the Mist Tribe?
No!
No!
Isn't it?
What movie did you watch?
I'm telling you, I was quite confused by this film. I have a lot of questions written down. I have less notes than normal and quite a few questions.
No, but
they're worshipping it.
Are they?
Yeah, it says at the beginning that some tribes, so the inference is this tribe worships snakes.
And I think it's because the snake protects them.
Oh.
And so by coming in, and actually what they're going to be doing is exposing the tribe to themselves and the modern world. I think the snake is doing this to protect the tribes.
Well, it's not just you that doesn't know what's going on, because Owen Wilson gets the best line of the whole film for me when no one knows what's going on. And he articulates this by saying, "You don't know shit about the shit we're in, and neither do I."
Is this good Owen Wilson or evil Owen Wilson? Because he has a massive turnaround halfway through.
He's turning evil.
Because what I love is the fact that good Owen Wilson at the start, who's like, "I'm a good guy, I'm Owen Wilson, got my hair in my eyes, I'm Owen Wilson." And then he's wearing a very flamboyant Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
The minute John Voight goes, "Join me," he puts on a very somber green shirt. And
no
you're
time
like,
for laughs.
No.
Oh, wow.
Owen Wilson changes things up fashion-wise.
Do you think that's to make him look more snake-like, that he's wearing a green shirt, so he'll blend in a little more?
Or the anaconda will go, "Oh, I was going to eat you, babe.
One of us.
You're a snake." So I'll leave you alone.
It certainly puts the end to any more nighttime jungle shagging, which I thought was the boldest thing I'd ever seen, to go off into the pitch black jungle in the middle of the night ostensibly for a shag.
Insane.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not pitch black, is it? It's really beautifully lit, this jungle that they're walking through. It's so romantic, the lighting. I was like, is it like that?
I was like, I don't even take the fucking bin out after 8 o'clock.
This is the thing. This is how horny Owen Wilson is. He's ignored. But then what's she? Maybe she's horny as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they both clearly are horny.
Of course.
Because the jungle makes him horny.
Yeah.
Does anything weird make you horny?
I once went into a tropical house and I got a bit aroused, so I get where he's coming from.
I quite like a library.
Oh, yeah, anywhere where you're told to be quiet.
It's really tense, isn't it? I'm so tense. Is anyone going to make a noise?
Don't look at me.
I think Vicky's done it in a library. She's laughing a bit too much.
Yeah, this is weird. What's Wait, happened?
Nothing. It just really tickled me. Don't look at me. Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on. And that we learned today that ice cubes don't melt in hot water by watching this film.
What?
It's a joke.
It's a pun.
Oh, sorry.
It's an actual pun. I feel like it's the first pun in this podcast
today. I'm not being
today.
Funny, but I'm quite good at puns, so...
Does it qualify as a pun?
It's written down here, so it must do.
I'd like to talk about people when they're in the water and they're trying to swim for their... Because obviously they get in the water at some point, so the jeopardy, the snake's on the loose, they're going to get in the water.
Why is it not called Snakes on the Loose?
And at some point, J-Lo's in the water with Ice Cube and they sense the snake and he's like, "Swim!" And she does the worst front crawl I've ever seen. Like, if you were swimming for your life, you were allowed to put your face in the water. Mm. And this happens in Deep Blue Sea as well, that Saffron Burrows does a very, very half-assed front crawl to get away with their life.
I wouldn't do the front crawl anyway. I'd do it.
Because you'd be so embarrassed.
Yeah. Breaststroke.
With your head above water?
Yeah.
Like a mum?
Yeah. I actually can't do the crawl. Can you do the crawl?
Yes.
Can you do the crawl?
We're learning that you can't do a lot of physical things on this podcast. Actually, this ties into another question I have. Probably my favourite bit in the film is when John Voight's tied to the pole and he jumps straight up in the air.
Oh, yeah.
Comes down, his legs wrapped around...
Denise's neck.
Denise's neck. Yeah. And he strangles her. This physical impossibility. And I was wondering, with your dense bones, would you be able to make that manoeuvre?
Well, no, theoretically, not at all.
I'd just lie on her and...
And crush her.
Yeah, she wouldn't be able to breathe because my bones are so dense.
Just put one dead arm across her.
And that bit's really awful, actually, that violent bit.
Where he kills Denise.
Is there something going on because he's like a snake? Because rather than any other way of killing her, he strangles her like a snake would. He crushes her.
Well, he's more snake than man, isn't he now? I think he loves the snakes. Like, it's strange, his relationship with snakes. I don't know if something's happened in the past.
Oh, where all the baby snakes are on the bone. He's going, "The babies. Oh, the babies. Back to your mother, babies." That's weird. Yeah. Now... I have a question, seeing as you seem to know a lot about snakes, V.
Yep.
How much does an anaconda really need to eat?
They eat quite infrequently. They're not very good on land. They're better in water. They don't eat people. They don't really regurgitate their food unless they feel threatened.
What?
It's to confuse an enemy and also to make themselves lighter so they can slither off.
Oh, so if someone was trying to kill an anaconda, it'd throw up its meal and the thing would go, oh, I'll have that then.
Or they're like, oh!
Oh my God, that's disgusting.
I can't believe you just did that and then turn around and
I've got
away.
Wet mouth. I have got wet mouth. Oh, I'm going to leave it. That has put me right off my food, which was going to be you.
Is it all the same snake in the film? Is there different snakes after him at the end?
What? Yes!
What?
Oh, you're going...
No.
Yes.
What?
So the snake that Ice Cube, like... who kills... No.
Ice Cube...
Wait, no. J-Lo. There's a snake that J-Lo puts a bullet in. That isn't the same snake at the end. It hasn't survived a bullet to its head where its eye comes out.
I thought it had.
See, well, I'm confused about this film.
Yeah, because why would you suddenly introduce another snake without making a big deal about
it? That's what I didn't understand.
The new snake is even bigger. It's like, oh my God, that snake was... We thought that snake was bad, but this one...
Yeah,
look,
no, it can't be that because any idiot would write the scene where it's like you've got the big snake and then the shadow of the bigger snake like hoves into view and it'd be like, you think that's a big snake? This is a big snake.
Right.
It wouldn't. No one would do it the way that you've just described.
I mean, I didn't write it.
Oh, okay.
But that's how it happens in the film.
<It's> not.
At times it felt like you did, Alex.
It's the same snake.
And final question for
you,
Vicky.
If I had written it, then I would be very happy with the line, don't make me out a monster. I didn't eat our dear captain, which I thought was great.
I love that he's trying to do the accent.
It's probably closer to a Paraguayan
I would say it probably is.
Than John Voight in this film.
Please, Peter, don't make me out a monster. I didn't eat the captain, Mateo.
Final question for you, Vicky, from me.
Mm-hmm.
As the podcast's resident seductress, what did you think of J-Lo's...
Look at, look at that look.
What did you think of J-Lo's efforts to seduce John Voight?
Absolutely laudable, commendable.
What was going on there?
Good for you, sister. You do what it takes to get the job done. Of course I didn't think that.
She put a bit of lipstick on for him as well.
She did, it was so odd because that took ages. I was like, what, why she's putting lipstick on? Oh, that's why she's putting lipstick on. He doesn't seem like the sort of man that would give a fuck about lipstick, if I'm honest.
No, he does say something along the lines of, it's been a while.
To which I was like, nonsense. With that charm and those crazy eyes.
And that greasy ponytail down your back.
And your flagrant disregard for people's personal liberty, you could have done whatever you like.
So is this a good John Voight performance?
It's incredible. Yeah. I can't be more enthusiastic about it.
You don't think it's gone too far?
Who cares?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. 100%. I mean, I guess the problem, if we are going to say there's a problem, the problem is that, like, the snakes seem less villainous than him. Like, it's called Anaconda. It's not called Creepy Ponytail Dude. And, like, he's the one. Like, that whole bit at the end where he's swallowed and spat back out.
Yeah.
And still, like, he's already started to dissolve.
Mm.
He looks a lot like the guy who crashes into the toxic waste in RoboCop. It's like his skin's falling off him. And he still manages to go...
Yeah, he still squeezes out a wink.
But I do wonder if this film is... I have a recurring... The one recurring nightmare I have is about snakes. And
what
I think it?
Tell us about it.
It's just... I'm in a room or I'm lying in bed and I'm aware that there's a snake in the top corner of the room.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't... I'm too frightened to look at it because I know if I look at it, it will come for me.
And it's not that kind of library, is that what you
And then eventually I have to look at it because... I can't sit without looking at it any longer. And then when I do, it comes for me. And that's when I wake up really
frightened.
It
bite frightened.
You on the face. I wake up just before it hits me. And I wonder if that came from here, because I don't remember having it before seeing this film. So I wonder if that's really messed me up.
And are you scared of snakes in real life?
A little bit.
Okay. Ooh,
not majorly, but a little bit.
Why would you not be fucking terrified?
Are you scared of them?
I think so. Like,
I don't like the way they move. I don't like the side-to-side thing. I don't trust that. Whereas a spider, at least it's coming straight at me.
I was watching this and then I noticed that I was gradually like raising my feet off the floor. I mean, I don't live in a snake-infested house as far as I'm aware, but I was like, I couldn't... And I was by myself and I just didn't like the thought of, you know, like something shooting out from under the coffee table and... No.
Wow.
Yep.
Are you
think of something funny to say? You've got fun.
No, I was actually, I was thinking, I had to say, I watched Arachnophobia and I've never been scared of spiders. And during that, I had my feet off the floor and I was like, I could feel things crawling on me.
Have you watched Arachnophobia since and found it frightening?
No, yeah, I've watched it since and it's rubbish. Right. Didn't like it at all.
Oh.
It's that guy at the end, the stupid scientist, who's like, you know when someone just does something so stupid in a movie and you're like, well, that's stupid. When he's trying to attract the spider's attention, he keeps plucking on its web going, yeah, come get me. And it does and kills him. And you're like, what?
There you go.
What was the plan?
Yeah, those scientists in Alien Covenant do that thing as well, where they're poking at the eggs and stuff. And
don't mention that movie on this podcast.
Okay.
I will not have this podcast sullied by mention of Alien Covenant. That is a terrible, terrible travesty of a film. That film is so bad. Ridley Scott even undoes his own alien life cycle. Billy Crudup gets an alien in it, face hugged, and then like that's supposed to take ages for the creature to gestate inside him. Like Michael Fassbender basically has a cigarette and goes, oh yeah, you got a chest burster. It's like, what the fuck? Sorry. I shouldn't have mentioned it. I should have told. It's my fault. I should have told you not to mention it.
You need to send me a list of things I can't mention.
Yeah.
But Anaconda.
Let's give some points to Jonathan Hyde for the second best line in this film, which is when he gets into the water. The last time I was in water like this, I was up all night picking leeches off my scrotum, which begs the question, tiny leeches or a massive scrotum? Why would it take all night?
Wow. Well,
got one off. Does it want to go? Maybe it wants to go back on. Oh, get off again. Oh, on again.
God, yeah. Leech on a scrotum.
In a library. I do think John Voight gets a really good death because he's a really good villain and you want a really good villain to have a horrible death, and it is horrible.
But yeah, that was a great ending with a great, as you say, a great villain kill. But then we get the survivors head off to destroy the peace and tranquility of those tribes people still.
It's a terrible ending.
They're off to film them.
The indigenous tribe comes sort of appearing out of the mist to save the narrative, which is insulting. And also they worship snakes, so wouldn't they have been like, where's my fucking snake?
Well, they don't look.
Who didn't fucking trick it up a chimney and set it on fire, did you? Because that was really important.
They don't look happy, though.
No, they don't.
So I like to think they're about to all be murdered by the tribespeople.
Serves them right.
The people of the mist are about to just kill all of them that are left.
Wow, that's the ending you want.
100%, yeah. I think these guys, as I've said already, I think these guys deserve it and they've earned it.
Jeez. I mean, Eric Stoltz hasn't really earned it, has he? He's sort of just
been... Yeah, but he's just a bit forgettable, so whatevs.
I think Anaconda's The Blood Orchid, Search for the Blood Orchid, Hunt for the Blood Orchid, the sequel, might be better than this.
Oh.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Oh, have you?
No.
It's really good. It's really good. That's all I'll say. I think you should watch it. I mean, if you haven't had enough already.
Because there have been three sequels now.
Yeah, I think Anaconda's Hunt for the Blood Orchid got a cinema release, though. The others are straight to DVD.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And I think maybe isn't there some connection with the plot of that one with Deep Blue Sea? I think the reason they need this, it's, yeah.
Yes, yeah, they're looking for a special orchid that they can use for their pharmaceutical company to do something amazing with medicine. Mm. Yeah.
So it takes some inspiration from our other film.
All in all, though, a very enjoyable movie.
Yes, a very, very enjoyable movie, to my surprise.
Yep.
Yeah, a terrific B movie.
Yep.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's move on to Deep Blue Sea from 1999. Chris.
When a dangerous storm hits a top-secret research facility, a ragtag group of scientists and money men do battle with fearsome genetically engineered creatures. Now wait, that's the plot of Jurassic Park. But it also works for my movie this week, which is Deep Blue Sea, where the characters were so preoccupied with whether or not they could make sharks smarter, they didn't stop to think if they should.
In the most advanced research facility in the world...
Beneath its glassy surface, world of gliding monsters.
Tell me I didn't see that. They recognize that gun.
It's impossible. Sharks do not swim backwards. They can't.
Somebody, please, tell me what that is.
Okay. I honestly, sometimes I put this as the second greatest shark movie of all time.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this one. But essentially, it's alien underwater.
Right, which is what Rennie Harlan... Cliffhanger director, Die Hard 2 director, Long Kiss Goodnight director, set out to make. He basically created this cast of largely unknown actors so that you wouldn't really know who was going to die in what order. And then he threw Samuel L. Jackson in, who was a star, and has him die halfway through in one of the greatest cinema deaths ever, or at least one of the most shocking and surprising, in the same way Tom Skerritt, Dallas in Alien, gets off halfway through. And you're like, oh, okay, this is no longer following the... template I thought it would.
Yep, I was going to build up to that, but we're going with Jackson's death.
Get straight in there.
Let's
it's
do
the best
it.
Bit.
Well, actually, it's not the best death. It's not the best death. I remember when I watched this, and I truly think Stellan Skarsgård's death in this movie is one of the most horrible deaths in cinema history. He gets his arm bitten off, then he gets raised up on a platform into a helicopter on a stretcher, then that falls into the water, then the sharks grab it, use him as a battering ram to smash into a lab, the glass cracks, they all escape, all the other people, apart from him, who has an oxygen mask on, so you've got to believe he is still strapped to this stretcher, slowly running out of air, so his ultimate death is drowning.
And I feel like there's an anti-smoking message in there because it bites off the arm that he's just sparked up a cigarette and is holding.
That whole lab is a mess. That's not any scientific lab. Like, the fact that he even has a packet of fags on him is ridiculous. And then his girlfriend gives him, like, not smart fags around the shark. And he's like, oh, yeah, shit, sorry, I won't do that. There's, like, four people present when they're doing shark brain surgery, which you think would require more than the skeleton crew that they've got that weekend. I didn't respect
it. It's because everyone's got the weekend off.
I know, but when
you're completely normal.
Yeah.
At these places, same in Jurassic Park, it's completely normal in these places. Yeah. Keep four people there with these dangerous man-eaters all around you.
Yeah. Where's the shotgun? We keep it in a break glass in emergency cupboard.
So what is going on with these sharks? They are...
They've broken the Harvard Convention!
I didn't think to look up the Harvard Convention.
Is it real? Do we know?
I didn't look it up. The character that seems very upset about that, Janine, that this convention's been broken, I was like, would you not already know that since you're supposed to be in the lab every single day?
But they're endeavouring to reactivate human brain cells to cure Alzheimer's. Mm. And they think sharks might be the key, but it's genetic engineering, which, as you say, is illegal.
Yep.
It looks like their research is going to be shut down. But Samuel L. Jackson, does it say in the film that he's the richest man in the world?
No, it says in the making of documentary.
Yeah, we're told he's the... not in the film, he's the richest man in the world. He's invested $200 million into the company.
Yeah.
He wants to pull it all, and they say, just come this weekend, come and have a look on this... what is it? It's a little...
The Aquatica. It's a research centre that's underwater and has pens on the surface to keep the sharks.
Yeah, labs underwater.
Yeah, he's worried that he's sunk $200 million in, and he says to Saffron Burrows at the start for why he's going to pull the funding, he goes... When the market opens on Monday, despite my reputation, I don't like heights.
Oh, yeah.
Which is confusing.
It doesn't make any sense at that point.
It doesn't make any sense. And you're also like, well, that's a shame because I heard you were the guy who liked heights.
And then ironically, she takes him underwater. So in this film, Saffron literally burrows.
Jesus Christ.
It's another pun.
We need to work on the definition of pun.
Yeah, so we get to this and we meet, we've already met him briefly, Thomas Jane, who is... This
Aquaman,
movie,
he's Aquaman.
He turns into an action star in front of our eyes in this movie.
Does he?
I think so. He's great. This is a guy who, like, he's a man's man. He swims with sharks, he wrangles
sharks.
Well,
they say he speaks the language of shark. But I feel like Tom Jane, I don't know, I find him not very likeable in this film. Like, his character in the film, he's such a dick to Samuel L. Jackson when he gets there.
I know, and he's paid for everything. I don't get it. Like, why is everyone so mean to him? Like, I don't like rich suits or something, or like corporate, yeah, whatever. It's like, he's paying your wages, yeah, dude. Like,
you know what Samuel L. Jackson doesn't like, though? Doesn't like gates closing behind him.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Janine? When Janine closes that gate, he just stares at it like...
Yeah. Another
for
thing
ages.
That you think is going to become important and doesn't become important, no, at all.
No, I watched... if you watch the making of, you'll have seen Thomas Jane in the making of, because he has a quote in this talking head. He's standing on the boat and they're interviewing him about the movie and he goes, if people knew how many sharks they were swimming with when they go to the beach, they wouldn't go to the beach. Then he pauses and goes... The Coast Guard knows. Like, he's worked out this weird conspiracy theory in his head where the Coast Guard knows there are loads of sharks.
And Thomas Jane knows, and yeah, no one else knows.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to let you into a little secret.
Yeah, he's the on
Coast
the inside.
Coast Guard knows how many sharks are out there. You're like, what? I've seen documents.
Is it better than his line? He's having an argument with Saffron Burrows and he's like, hey, you know what you're doing. I'm just a fish keeper. Can we not do better than fish keeper?
Yeah. Do you know everyone else is calling you a shark wrangler?
Yeah,
which sounds cool.
So much better.
And you're going for fish keeper.
Fish keeper.
These are my fish. I keep them. No one else can get to them. They're mine. I'm keeping them. These fish aren't loose. They're kept by me, the fish keeper.
So the person that's been doing the experiments on the sharks, although unbeknownst to everyone else on this...
For some reason. Which
Janice, not Janine.
Believable. Oh, sorry,
her name's
Janice.
Sorry. I knew it wasn't Janine. Sorry, go on.
Is played by Saffron Burrows. They first recognise that there's something going on because a shark recognises a gun and then swims backwards.
Yeah.
Although I guess what these sharks are capable of and what they know is something that, as the film goes on, becomes more and more vague. I mean, they seem to understand structural engineering quite quickly.
They do, don't they?
They know the difference between steel and...
Titanium.
Yep. There's a lot of things they figured out really quickly. But the beauty of this film is that we've got all hell breaking loose. But at the same time, we've got what seems like a completely different movie happening with a rapper and his parrot.
Mm.
He spends a lot of the film on his own talking to the parrot or himself, which is not an easy thing to do, and yet he pulls it off.
He's
Are
very good. Very good. Rennie Harlan had to fight to get him in this movie because he wanted to cast him. And I think is it Warner's? Warner's were like, no, I don't think so. And he was like, nope, you're having him. And then he was meant to die really early on. And Rennie Harlan was like, he's so good, we're keeping him alive.
I just didn't think he was very good, that's all.
What?
What he does...
He's got a natural likability about him.
He's really likeable, but there are a lot of scenes where he's required to look terrified, and all he does to show you how terrified he is shiver very loudly and very expressively. Did you ever hear that story about, I can't remember which of the cast of Desperate Housewives, but she'd had quite a lot of Botox in her whole face, and particularly in her forehead, and she was unable to express surprise anymore. So the writers had to start, every time she was surprised, she had to drop a teacup.
How many times did that happen?
Like, look.
the crockery bill on that set.
But what I'm saying is, it's hard to look terrified like just with your eyes. And so he has this like huge face tremor to show that he's scared. I didn't think it was that good.
Regarding LL Cool J, though, have you watched or listened from beginning to end to the song he did for the film?
I heard it over the credit. That's him at the end of the credits, isn't it?
Now, how is it? My head is like a shark's fin.
My cap, isn't it?
Oh. You're both wrong. Oh. It's my hat is like a shark's fin.
I was closer.
Actually, do you want to hear a snatch of it just so you the audience knows what he's saying? My hat is like a shark's fin. Yeah. He says that 35 times in the song. I counted it. But it turns out it has. There's more to it than it just being because he was in this film. So in 1987, he did a record called I'm Bad, where he raps, MCs can't win, I make them rust like tin, they call me Jaws, my hat is like a shark's fin.
Oh.
Where it kind of makes sense in that. It doesn't in this context actually make sense, but he's actually referring to an old song.
While you've got your phone, can I ask you to look something up? What's your favourite shark?
Great white.
What's your favourite shark?
Probably the short fin mako.
Yeah, look up a shark. I'm going to show you a shark that's going to scare the fucking life out of you.
You know this is an audio.
Yeah, but I just want to get your reaction because it's so horrendous.
Okay. I also like the thresher shark because it can stun its prey with a flick of its tail.
I know loads about sharks. Just
I've got a shark tattooed on my wrist.
Have you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe you know more about sharks.
Well, tell me about your history with sharks.
Give me the thing.
Alex.
Sorry, where's the internet?
Just go on Google there.
What?
We've got to cut all this now.
This is good stuff. Are you ready to have your mind blown?
Go.
This is my favourite shark. It's a goblin shark.
That's not real.
That's from the Smithsonian. It has to be real.
Yeah, the animatronic wing.
I can't stop
wing.
Staring at it. It's just unbelievable.
The guy that wrote the script actually witnessed a shark attack.
No.
In Australia.
But they're so rare. I find it hard to believe.
Well, he witnessed the horrific effects of a shark attack when they washed up in Queensland.
Yeah, he saw a body.
Really?
He saw a partially eaten shark attack victim's body on the beach when he was living in Australia, I think.
He's from Queensland. Yeah, it happened in Queensland. And he says there really was not much left of him. And it gave him nightmares about... sharks in a passageway that could read his mind, and that's where he got the idea for the film from.
I did think Rennie Harlan, because the whole thing about this was they were like, Jaws is Jaws, we don't see the shark a lot, it's the bar to be reached with shark movies. But Rennie Harlan wanted to show the sharks a lot more. He wanted to see them, and he wanted that was going to be the big difference between Jaws. He was like, we've got the technology now.
No more hiding the sharks, right?
But he actually says on the making of documentaries, like, I challenge anybody to tell me what is real and what is not.
Challenge accepted.
I'll take that challenge.
So I was wondering, though, in 1999, if I was more convinced by them than I am now. I'm not sure. I think the animatronic shark does look real sometimes.
You know, we can't answer that because...
I would like you to have a think about it, though, if you could.
Okay.
Cast your minds back to my childhood.
Okay.
I think the animatronic shark does look actually very real sometimes.
But
it's just the CGI shark.
Real shark, because a Mako shark doesn't ever get that big. Or it's become bigger.
Right.
So it can't
Yeah, but
be
I can
real.
Suspend my disbelief enough Sorry, that looks real to me.
That shark isn't real.
The shark isn't real.
No.
There's no way the shark could ever be real because they've created a monster shark.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is if they shot footage of a real shark, then they can mess around with the scale so it looks bigger.
Okay.
I'm not saying there's a 26-foot Mako shark anyway. Do you know why he made them 26-foot? Because the shark in Jaws was 25 feet long and he wanted to make it one bigger.
Can we talk about the alternate ending?
What? Oh, wait.
So... in test screenings, apparently Rennie Harlan had so many cards that came back that said, kill the bitch. Because in the original version, Saffron Burrows doesn't die. And they believed that she was a hero. And they couldn't believe that people wanted to see her dead. And so they had to change the ending quite quickly in order for her to die.
Why would you ever see her as the hero?
I think it's really fascinating because I was obsessed with this. The minute she's on screen, she's very cold, presumably on purpose, very driven, she just wants to get, she's got this whole backstory about her dead dad. And that's supposed to make you think that she's a hero. She's doing it for noble causes.
For the greater good.
Yeah. And she is trying to cure Alzheimer's and other degenerative neurological impairments. And that is, there's no one, you can't be a bad person, I suppose, if you're trying to do that. Mm. And yet I just imagine the dialogue being spoken in a different way, but the same words, would she have come across as a hero? It's just every single line she's got, I think she's really good in it, but she delivers it really icily. And that's presumably what led people to think that she deserved to... kill the bitch, which is...
Is that what they really wrote on the cards?
Yeah, that's what they really wrote.
Do you want to know some even more bad news from the deleted scenes?
Yeah.
Janice is pregnant. With
oh
Stellan's with Stellan's child.
That's terrible! There's no need to do that!
Yeah, and Rennie said that we cut it because it was tonally a bit off.
It is tonally a bit off.
But her death scene, she gets... I don't know if you... clocked. It was a tribute to Rennie Harlan doing a tribute to Cliffhanger.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I love that film.
I didn't spot that. I had to hear it, but
there's no real reason for him to hang upside that, but it is brilliant.
Yeah, so it's a reference to the beginning of Cliffhanger when Sylvester Stallone's hanging down and
take my hand. Brilliant. Yeah.
In fact, she say exactly the same line because she goes, "I don't want to die."
Oh yeah,
and that's the line in Cliffhanger. That starts a cliffhanger. Upset me.
Yeah, me too.
So much as a kid. That bit is so shocking.
Great way to open a film, though.
Yep. And there's a teddy that falls out of the bag first, and there's a teddy at the start of this.
Oh, is that what it is? Because it doesn't make any sense. That boat party tonally is very confusing.
Speaking of getting naked, Saffron Burrows gets down to her underwear in the film.
She does, and I was anticipating you throwing this over to me like you always do because you're scared of saying anything.
I've got lots to say. I just like to get your opinion before I put my foot in it. They've claimed it was an homage to Alien. I'm not buying that.
No. I wasn't happy about it at all. I understood the point of that the suit would prevent her from being electrocuted, but well, there are plenty of...
Isn't she wearing rubber shoes, yes, though, she already?
She's wearing rubber shoes already.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting, though. You know that shark's electrocuted. The first one is blown up, and the third one is... It's a bomb.
A bomb, yeah.
It's the three ways the sharks die in Jaws 1,
but,
2, and 3.
Is that right?
No, I read it and I disagreed.
I wasn't sure if that
it.
Was true. And also, I think there's only three or four ways to kill a shark in spectacular fashion in a film.
You can strangle it.
Thomas Jane could strangle it.
Yep.
You can't.
He could just get a meaty man arm around the back of it.
I'd pull its tail. Mm.
Fire it into space. That's one. find out if it has any
fears.
Food allergies. And then give it that food.
Can't bear oysters. Weird. But I was confused by why Saffron Burrows, there's the shot where she comes out of the shower and she's wearing a terry toweling dressing gown because it's the 90s and that was acceptable.
I still have those.
Yeah, what? No, but you wouldn't be, they're a private thing, aren't they? They're not like, if we've got a sexy hero, she will wear a toweling dressing gown. But it was different.
Who's she dressing sexy for, though?
That's a good point. But then why does she have to take all her clothes off?
I want to go back to something we touched upon at the start of this conversation, but I think it deserves more time. Samuel L. Jackson's death.
Oh, it's brilliant.
But also the build-up to it. So how do we feel about what happened to him in the Alps?
The Himalayas.
No, the Alps.
Yeah, I checked
you. He's corrected me, isn't he, without checking. Can't help himself.
No, because that's the line, because...
she gets it wrong as well.
She goes, what happened in the Himalayas? He goes, the Alps.
Yeah, really like, different.
So what did happen in... the Alps.
I think he ate someone.
Yeah, so do I.
Do you? Yeah. I think they were starting to come violent towards each other, and so they killed a couple of them because it was all...
Because I was going to rewind it and find out how long were they actually trapped? It was only... Was it like a week or 10 days or 10 hours? I couldn't remember. Because if it was only 10 hours and they ate people...
It seems
that's
unnecessary.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, you just wouldn't you?
You can wait.
Yeah, I mean, he's grumbled once, give me your hand.
But that's where this film is brilliant in everything that you, if you think you're one step ahead of it, they are one step ahead of you. So when LL Cool J climbs into the oven, any normal person is like, turn the oven on. And then the oven gets turned on. And when Samuel L. Jackson is taking a million years to give this massive speech, standing by the lip of a pool where there's a killer shark on the loose.
And he's just been told to stand away from the edge.
Yeah, brilliant.
On that commentary, Reddy Harlin says, we really went out of our way to make it the longest, corniest, most pompous speech.
Yeah.
Because we knew the audience would be groaning and blaming the filmmakers for putting such a crappy scene in. Mm. Because that's what we wanted, so everyone would let their guard down.
It's brilliant.
Would you like to hear that moment? As it happens.
Yes. Yes, I would. Sorry, yes.
We're not going to fight anymore. We're going to pull together and we're going to find a way to get out of here. First, we're going to seal off this wound.
Still remember that moment, seeing it back in 99 with my mates at uni, and it's a moment that we still talk about and laugh about. Like, it had such a profound effect.
It's genuinely like, it's one of those moments that you can never fully enjoy a second time because you know it's coming, but that first time you saw it, I'm just like...
And it's the kind of moment actually that would be spoilt now because it would be all over the internet and word would have got out, whereas back then you just didn't know going in that the major star in this film was going to get bumped off in that
way. That's
your
weekly back then section. You seem to do.
But it's true.
Before the internet, things were simpler.
It's harsh because it's true.
Yeah.
So the film was a hit, But Tom,
a moderate hit.
Tom Jane was talking about the fact that he really felt like it could have been a bigger hit. He said that the studio wasn't really fully behind it. And then about a week before it came out, they did a huge preview in New York. And he said the audience just went crazy when the Sam Jackson scene happened. And he said they didn't calm down for about 5 minutes. And the studio suddenly started pumping money into the marketing at that very last minute. But by that point, Runaway Bride was the big film that week. But also Blair Witch had come out the week before.
Oh, wow.
And that was just building and building. And they were just a bit too late. They kind of missed their opportunity.
I went to see Blair Witch at the cinema.
I did.
It was a packed Odeon in Camden. And I remember it ended and it's sort of, it's the guy standing in the corner and then it's just like cuts to black and there was just a silence in the cinema and then one guy in the middle just went, "What, that's it?"
Oh, good for him.
Everyone started laughing and suddenly it wasn't scary anymore.
That was me. But while it was a modest hit, it did spawn a sequel.
No, I never watched it. Did you watch it?
It came out last year.
Yeah, I know. Oh.
19 years later.
Wow.
Would you like to hear that? I haven't seen it. Would you like to hear the plot of Deep Blue Sea 2? A shark conservationist is hired as a consultant on a top secret project on genetically enhanced sharks funded by a pharmaceutical billionaire. But soon the highly intelligent super sharks turn on their masters and begin to pick them off one by one.
Oh, I have seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we've all seen it.
Well, that saves some time.
We've
That's
all
good.
Seen it.
Stupid people.
So is there any more for any more? I've got some Mako shark facts, but I think they're quite...
Oh, tell me. I'm really interested.
Are you?
I know it's the fastest shark.
Yeah.
I mean, they're mainly around it being the fastest shark.
Oh.
The longest one that's been caught is 15 foot long.
I don't know what a foot is, so that doesn't make any sense to me. Okay. That doesn't seem
that big. But you know roughly what about 6 foot is, because a lot
of...
Because of people.
I'm exactly 6 foot.
Show off.
And I'm just a little bit taller. They're only responsible for one fatal attack out of 9, which I think sounds like quite a lot, even though people says they're not man killers. Oh. I did get this bit of information, which you tell me if this is useful or not. In terms of them killing people. This doesn't mean it's necessarily safe to get into the water with them, but divers report that a good sign you're being targeted as their next meal is if they start to swim in a figure eight pattern and approach you with their mouths open. Yeah, thanks for that.
That tends to be a clear sign. If they bite you...
Do you, you know, obviously what you're meant to do if you are ever attacked by a shark is you... punch them on the nose.
Is it true?
You punch them on the nose because then the shark has a nosebleed, smells its own blood, and
eats itself. Yep. Wow, I didn't know that.
That's how it works.
I was listening to you seriously then for a second.
Do you know Samuel Jackson's favourite movie of his own to rewatch?
Ooh,
is it Deep Blue Sea?
I would say, is it Unbreakable?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. It's a Rennie Harlan film.
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Long Kiss Goodnight, yeah. Yeah, that's his favourite of his own movies to rewatch.
Mm. I mean, Rennie Harlan did some really fun movies at that time, didn't he?
Yeah, Driven.
And he did Driven and Cutthroat Island. I'm thinking of Cliffhanger this and The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Cliffhanger this, Long Kiss Goodnight, Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
What?
It's okay.
No, it's great.
No,
Die Hard 2 is a great film.
You watch it back
film.
To back with the other one and it's not good.
I prefer it to Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Mm.
No?
Well, Die with a Vengeance doesn't feel much like a Die Hard film, though, does it? It was a script called Simon Says that they just sort of retrofitted.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and so it could have been anyone running around New York doing that stuff.
That's Die Hard 4.0, ridiculous name. That was a script for 24, the movie that was going to be Kiefer Sutherland, which explains why it is exactly like it is.
Or Live Free and Die Hard, as it was called in the States.
Cool. All right, then, so... Anaconda versus Deep Blue Sea. Who is our winner going to be? I'll start with you, Victoria. Hit me.
It's a really difficult decision this week, principally because of John Voight and how magnificent he is in Anaconda. The thing is, though, Deep Blue Sea uses every element it can to up the stakes. So it isn't just sharks, in the water, air pressure, the building's falling down. It's cold. There's a parrot on the loose. And so for that ingenuity... I am going to go with Deep Blue Sea.
One for Deep Blue Sea.
Well, I really feel like I'm between the devil and the Deep Blue Sea
with this one.
That's nice. I do really love both of these films. But I love the fact that Deep Blue Sea puts the sharks in man's environment and then flood it so they make it their own. So there's something unique about that vision. I agree with you, Rennie Harlin? No, John Voight gives me a real issue because I'd like to put John Voight in Deep Blue Sea.
That would be amazing.
Can we do that? But as we can't, and if a movie is made of great moments, I think Deep Blue Sea has two in terms of those two kills. And for that reason, it's Deep Blue Sea for me.
So Deep Blue Sea, two votes. It is the winner. Just for the record, I too would have gone for Deep Blue Sea.
Did someone order the fish?
Somebody, please tell me what that is.
All right then, so Deep Blue Sea is the winner this week. Chris, I believe it's your turn to pick the films for us next week. What we do?
Alex, I'm going to start with you. You are getting 1998's Deep Impact.
Okay.
Vicky, you might be able to guess what's coming next because you're getting 1998's Armageddon.
Great.
And with that, Armageddon out of here.
Yay, that was good.
So many puns.
But if people want to get in touch, I have got that information. We are at ClashPod on Twitter. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think. Or if you want to tell us what you thought of this week's films or next week's films, you can email us at show@clashpod.com.
Lovely stuff. Armageddon and Deep Impact are next week's films. I think I may have worked out the connection. I think. Thank you very much for listening. Please, if you would be so kind as to subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, that would be lovely. Back in a week. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.